Grizzly One.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of five. Yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, back at the helm on the drive home at five to all of you. As we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com. As you get back into your vans, your cars, your pickup trucks, and reconnect with us on your terrestrial radio. And no doubt at some point in this hour's broadcast before Mark Levin, you'll be banging on the dashboard so hard it may actually cause you to go off the road. And don't blame me. Blame the fact that you have absolutely no control of your emotional faculties. But with the State of the Union address tonight, live coverage of that starts at 9 p.m. when normally you would listen to John Batchelor here. There are many people wondering if it will be the firebrand Donald Trump or if they're going to pump him full of Prozac before he reads from the teleprompter to obviously those collected in the audience and those across America. Speaking of those in the audience, going to be a lot of MIAs missing in action, Democrats of all type. In fact, you know, the only claim to fame of the nebbishy schlubby congressman from the Bronx and Westchester, Elliot Engel. Oh, God. You talk about somebody in need of testosterone, right? M-Drive. He would line up like 3 days in advance because he'd want it known that he was the first congressman, congresswoman in line to shake the president as they were coming down the aisle. Always followed by Jesse Jackson Jr. before he went Meshug, Titch, Dubatz, and went to the crazy farm. But that's all you knew about these guys. He will not be in attendance. A lot of Democrats will not be in attendance. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, proud graduate of Madison High School, the same school in Brooklyn that graduated the schmuck, no make that the putts, Chuck E. Cheese Schumer, and the out the cocker, Bernie Sanders. She has said she will not be there. And it's interesting because Huckleberry, or as I call him, Mike Huckabee, former governor of Arkansas, presidential candidate, tweeted out that the reason she wasn't going to be in attendance with the other United States Supreme Court justices was she couldn't bring in her CPAP machine. And I always said, well, you know, why not do what Strom Thurmond did, the senator for life from South Carolina, the racist, the segregationist. He had an aide who always followed him with a defibrillator. And I didn't know what that was for a while, a defibrillator. I thought, because all politicians lie, it would prevent them from telling fibs, white lies, and actually what they typically do, embellish the facts and tell big lies. And then somebody had a pimp slap me and correct me and let me know a defibrillator was shock treatment to the heart in case all of a sudden you were headed to being room temperature and taking a dirt bath. But there's a lot to discuss. And on the line, before we figure out the over-under point spread of the direction that Donald Trump is going to go, is our own Rita Cosby. She's the political director of operations here at WABC. You can hear her on Sunday mornings from 6 to 7 with interviews that generally rock the nation and set the table for the news that is broadcast on Sunday nights and Monday morning. Thanks for joining us again, Rita.
Great to be with you, Curtis, and also I think some people may need a defibrillator because it's going to be interesting. My White House sources are telling me, quote, expect the unexpected. They're hoping that Trump is going to stay on prompter, but they can't guarantee it, and they said there will be some, quote, zingers tonight. What's going to be fascinating, you just pointed out, it's going to be so interesting to see who's not there. there's so many different people that may not be there, and even the ones who are going to be there are bringing interesting guests. You're going to see people bringing some dreamers. You're going to see people who Donald Trump has tweeted against. You know, you always try to bring the opposite party, always tries to bring somebody who's going to kind of keep the president on edge. So it's going to be fascinating to see the interaction and to see if Donald Trump actually stays on script. Even his own people are telling me tonight they're not sure if he will stay on 100% script, and they said expect some surprises.
Well, many Trumpers and Trumpettes are already expressing wariness that this version of Donald Trump giving his very first State of the Union address will be more flaccid in the way he deals with those core issues, as he did, especially during the campaign, then turgid. So do you get a hint? In fact, let's go to the audio tape of what the president said just a few weeks ago to a bipartisan group of electeds on the Hill.
This should be a bipartisan bill. This should be a bill of love. Truly, it should be a bill of love, and we can do that.
Bill of love towards DACA. He's now added on the Dreamers, the Washington Post. Rita Cosby in their main editorial is suggesting that this will be a pathway to citizenship for 11 million illegal aliens. You have any hint as to what direction he's going to go on the immigration illegal alien measure?
Yeah, I'm being told that he will definitely try to reach out to both sides on immigration tonight, and that seems to be the issue. I mean, he's looking at the polls in America right now. Curtis, you and I have talked about this quite a bit on the show. The polls are showing that people want at least some solution, particularly with Dreamers. Of course, we're talking 700,000 people, but it looks like he is going to go well beyond that. But also reach out to Democrats and say, listen, here's something we can find common ground on. The one point I'm also hearing, Curtis, is on North Korea. I'm being told expect some interesting headlines, and that North Korea, whatever he's going to say about North Korea tonight, I don't know what else he can say beyond calling the guy a rocket man. You know, I mean, he's really taken it to extremes on what he has said. But whatever he's going to say tonight on North Korea is going to be maybe some headlines tomorrow. So he's going to try to reach out in certain points, but on other points, hold fast, stand strong on national security, as he always has. And I'll say one thing, even Trump, boring, flaccid Trump, is still better than some of the other ones we've heard in the past in terms of oratory skills. So we could have some interesting moments, even in the crowd. Remember, I always think back, Curtis, so it was President Obama's speech, and it was a speech to Congress on health care. It wasn't a State of the Union. And then you suddenly had Joe Wilson, congressman from South Carolina, Republican, who I know, stood up and shouted, I remember, and it shocked everybody, and it got criticism from all sides when he said, you lie, you lie, you lie. There's always these dramatic moments. And this is sort of the moment for opposition also. Who knows who's going to maybe try to sneak into the State of the Union? Who knows who's going to come in there, what they're going to say? So there could be an era of unpredictability, and I think that's what everyone's going to stay glued to tonight.
But, Rita Cosby, my fear is that this State of the Union address will go on and on and on, because we know this president loves applause, loves to be a peacock, the center of attention. The more you stroke him, the bigger the smile is. So, as is the tradition of the State of the Union, the party in power, they get up, they applaud the minority party, they sit on their hands and on their tuchus.
Right.
This could go to like 1 o'clock in the morning, because we know Trump, he'll wave them on when they're applauding. Come on,
he will. And that's when he goes off the script. And by the way, sometimes these do go long. I was looking to see what was the longest State of the Union in modern history. It was Bill Clinton had an average of 74 minutes. Obama was 63 minutes. But you're right, Trump loves to talk. And then on the flip side, Curtis, after it's all over, the Democrats, who of course cannot stand this president by and large, as we have seen, have a number of rebuttal speeches. Usually there's one or two. They have basically five different rebuttal speeches, even one in Spanish. So their rebuttal is going to go on and on and on. So
now, Rita,
you know, it's going to be a long night.
Don't tell me the main response is from another Kennedy. Where do they find this Kennedy? Well, Kennedy fried chicken? I mean, is that as creative as they can be? Find a Kennedy who is either on Ambien or knocking back Irish car bombs.
And this is going to be the great nephew of President Kennedy, Joe Kennedy from Massachusetts. So, yeah, they had to find, it was like, okay, anything we can do, let's find something for a vision for America to try to show.
I think we lost Rita Cosby. You see, this was the revenge of the Kennedys. You know, The Kennedys were at their height, 60s, 70s, I'd say, until Ted Kennedy basically blew his opportunity at beating Jimmy Carter the second time that Jimmy Carter was running for re-election, and he primaried him. And not only was Ted Kennedy a lush and incapable of reconnecting with his thought process and deep six that campaign, but naturally the shadow of Chappaquiddick was like hovering over his candidacy. And still Americans were like, oh, Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy. And look at all the deadbeat slacker Kennedys we've had since. And Rita Cosby, you mean to tell me their main responders? Now, which generation of degenerate Kennedys is this?
This is Joe Kennedy III. Mm-hmm. He is the great nephew of President Kennedy. And it'll be interesting. They're trying to show the sort of young, you know, vision back to Kennedy, this hopeful, positive time. And clearly they're going to say, listen, our message is one of optimism. Trump is not one of optimism. And the chord that Trump is going to have to strike tonight, it's interesting because Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary, who I've known for a long time, Sarah, you know, has basically already kind of hinted what the message is. You always go, what is the state of the union? She's saying the state of the union is exceptional. It's incredible. So Trump is going to try to stay optimistic tonight. So I think fifth or sixth or 20th generation Kennedy is going to be hard to beat that.
Well, do appreciate that. You want to catch Rita Cosby, our political director here at WABC tonight, for her coverage of the State of the Union address, which starts at 9 p.m. normally when you would hear John Batchelor. You think out of all the Democrats that could have represented the party in the response to the president's State of the Union, in this age of Me Too and You're Next, what do I most associate Kennedys for being? Leches, pervs. John F. Kennedy is president. Robert Kennedy is attorney general. And definitely Ted Kennedy, like a bug in a rug. Remember him and Christopher Todd as they were drunk and they sandwiched a waitress at their favorite watering hole in Washington, D.C. You think that's necessarily the best image when clearly the flavor of the day is Me Too, You're Next? And how many more Kennedys are up next, in which we're going to find out they're nothing but pervs because it's genetic to their family heritage.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa.
On the air, on the app. Curtis Sliwa, live.
My boy Curtis Sliwa.
Local.
There's a guy in a red hat.
On it.
Everybody listens to Curtis.
77 WABC.
The Bronx courtroom earlier today, where dozens of cops flooded it as an NYPD sergeant went on trial for shooting dead a mentally ill, bat-wielding Bronx woman. It was, I think, 2016. But it was interesting because the assistant district attorney prosecuting this sergeant basically said that it's a murder charge. That he purposefully did it. Or maybe I'm misconstruing it because it just happened a few hours ago. In order to straighten me out or embellish what I said, on the line is Larry McShane, great gumshoe reporter for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for joining us again on The Drive Home at 5, Larry.
Thanks for having me, and it's nice to have you back. I hope you're feeling okay.
Oh, 1,000% better. But, Larry, what exactly did the assistant DA prosecuting this case against the NYPD sergeant charge him with in his opening remarks?
Yeah, in his opening remarks, Newton Mendez said that the evidence will prove that Sergeant Hugh Barry, who's charged with murder in this, you were right, 2016 case, failed in his training. He failed to listen to Mrs. Danner, the victim, Deborah Danner, and that he also failed to grasp the actions of a mentally ill woman. The ADA said that he had received training in all these things, and when the training was put to the test, he failed the test, and that's how Deborah Danner was killed.
Now, there haven't been charges like this against a member of the NYPD, if I remember correctly, since the 41 shots were fired at Amadou Diallo in the Bronx.
1999, yep.
Right, and wasn't it at that point, at that time, that the attorneys, the PBA attorneys, approached the Bronx DA, Robert Johnson, and said, you can't be fair and unbiased in this. We want this court case to be tried in Albany.
Yeah, they didn't go through Johnson. I believe they had to make an appeal that their clients could not, like you said, get a fair trial. And it was indeed moved to Albany, and they were tried up in Albany. They were all four acquitted, and they walked.
So it's been no desire on the part of the attorneys for Sergeant Barry to do likewise, is there?
I don't think so. He would have had to do it long before this. You know, I'm sure you remember in the past, a lot of times officers charged in the Bronx would go for a bench trial where the judge heard all the evidence. But in this case, you know, it's a jury trial, and the jury was told, you know, you're going to have to decide, you know, if the shooting was justified or if it was not justified. And of course, the lawyer for Sergeant Barry made the argument the other way, that Deborah Danner was shot and killed because she was swinging a lethal weapon, a baseball bat, at the sergeant's head.
Yeah, but Larry, I'm saying to myself, the most famous of these cases involving EDPs emotionally disturbed was Eleanor Bumpers back in,
sure,
I think, 84, was involved in Sedgwick Housing Projects. Her own daughter called the cops in. They came in the ESU. She was throwing lie, you know. Mario Marola charged the cop. There were demonstrations galore against him when he was the Bronx DA. Any similarities here with this case?
Well, I mean, I think the obvious similarities are you have a police officer inside an apartment, a small space with an emotionally disturbed woman, emotionally disturbed older woman. And I think you'll recall in the Bumpers case, there was an acquittal in that case. It's funny you mentioned the police protests. I remember there were so many police officers on the steps of the Bronx courthouse that they basically caused them to buckle. And the side steps there by Yankee Stadium were closed down for years.
Yeah, that was Phil Caruso, I think, at the time, head of the PBA.
Yep.
And those were massive demonstrations. But I do appreciate the fact that you're following this case, Larry McShane. The fireworks started earlier today with opening remarks against Sergeant Hugh Barry. But I will tell you this, just as in the Bronx, a cop will never get the benefit of the doubt before a jury because they love the color blue of the Crips street gang than the NYPD. It's like if you went to Staten Island, like we saw in the case involving, boy, why is the name? I can't breathe. Why is it that all of a sudden that escapes me? That when Dan Donovan ended up going to grand jury on the Eric Garner case, in Staten Island, the benefit goes to the NYPD, who wear blue, not the Crip street gang. So you go from one extreme, the Bronx, to the other extreme, Staten Island. So maybe there should be some island, you know, amongst the five boroughs where these controversial cases get handled, where you know the jury could be mezze mezze poco poco, meaning half and half.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
As we continue on the drive home at 5, you know, it's bad enough you queue up to catch your flight. You got to deal with the TSA. It makes you take your belt off, your shoes, even though you don't fit the profile of a terrorist. But it's, you know, everybody's got to take it off. And then finally, you struggle to get on board, and you're waiting, because people are like pigs, you know. They put too much luggage, or bring too much on, to stick in the overhead bins, and you wait a month of Sundays. But I've noticed of late a series of stories about people who have really taken advantage of what they call the emotional animals that you can bring on board. You know, give you emotional support, service animals. This one woman wanted to bring a peacock on board to United Airlines flight leaving from Newark International Airport, and United said, nah, enough is enough. And there have been other cases, in fact, of people claiming they had to have their emotional support animal or their service animal, and they've come in a panoply of different forms. On the line to discuss it, Pauline Frommer. She does the Frommer's Travel Guide show, which you can hear after Joan Hamburg Saturdays from 3 to 4. Thanks for joining us again, Pauline.
My pleasure. And you know what they call that peacock? I think that was a visual support animal, somebody who just can't be without beauty, who finds the airlines too darn ugly. That's my guess.
Now, how has it gotten to this point where somebody thinks that they can take a peacock on board and they haven't been paid by NBC, you know, Channel 4, to promote their symbol? How do they think they can get away with this stuff?
It's really terrible, and it puts the people who do need service animals, people who are blind and whose dog is their eyes, you know, they're now going to have more hassles when they try and fly Delta. Delta last week said enough is enough. They were flying 700 service animals a day, and they just said a lot of these animals don't need to be in the cabin, and possibly we'd rather be charging you to have these animals in the cabin, because a lot of people, you get the emotional support certificate that costs $150 once, but if you need to fly with your dog a lot, that's a lot of money. You have to pay extra to have that dog in the cabin, so this is a way to save money.
What did people used to do years ago who needed emotional support? I mean, you couldn't bring a service animal on if you wanted to transport an animal. It would be put in a cage and put down below in steerage.
Well, it's only in the last couple of years that emotional support animals have even been recognized, that they would give out these certificates. I have a friend who got one for her cat because she moved into an apartment where they didn't allow pets. And it was easy peasy to just go to the veterinarian and say, I think it was, it might have been a psychiatrist, and say, can you give me a certificate for a support animal? You know, it was done in 10 minutes. It's absurd. It's just, it's one of the...
So the cat somehow kept that person cool and calm. But you mentioned the dogs. That seems to be the prevalent emotional support or service animal. There have been a number of cases now reported where dogs have attacked other passengers. And then all of a sudden, they drop some poop, and the smell, the stink, because, you know, the air just circulates around and around in the airplane. Everybody's got to deal with it the rest of the flight. That's nuts.
It's nuts, and also, you know, you have to balance the needs of that dog owner with the needs of people who may be allergic to pet dander. That's a really uncomfortable situation for somebody who's allergic to dogs or cats to have a cat or a dog sitting one aisle away.
Now, I noticed there's a new trend. Apparently, a woman has set it off with the airlines and passengers in general. You know how we generally say, oh, if you want to remain cool, calm, and collected, if you want to have control of your emotional faculties and your physical faculties, do yoga. And apparently, a woman pulled out her yoga mat, and in the middle of the aisle, while the plane was in flight, she started turning her body into a human pretzel. And naturally, all the passengers were, what the hell are you doing, lady? You're doing your yoga exercise routine in the middle of the aisle?
And the flight attendants allowed that? I'm amazed, because I think it's federal law that you have to keep the aisle clear. Although once I was on a flight within India, and an old grandmother just got up and lay down on the aisle to sleep, and everybody just stepped around her for the rest of the flight. But you don't expect to see that here in the U.S. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, the ones who weren't complaining were the male passengers, because they like looking at the yoga pants, you know, those tight-fitting leggings that women will wear when they're doing their yoga sort of pretzel imitations.
Well, you'll have to be the expert on that. I am not, but anyway.
Now, you know, it almost gets to the point where if somebody came and had that piece of paper you described earlier, what is it that the shrink gives you?
It's a certificate that shows that you need an emotional support animal, that you have to have that animal with you in times of high stress like flying.
Okay. I know when I took my kids to the zoo, you know, you have the ponies, you have the regular style horses, and then you have the miniature horses, which are kind of small, almost the size of a big dog. But can you imagine you're coming down the middle of the aisle looking for your seat, and there next to you is your miniature horse there, neighing away like Mr. Ed?
Yeah, it's crazy, the variety of animals that people are claiming are support animals. There are support snakes. I can't imagine anything less supportive feeling than a snake, but people have certificates for them, and people have tried to bring them on planes. Snakes, animals with hooves, animals with feathers, it's really gotten out of control. And so the airlines are saying, Delta has put its foot down and says, you have to, 48 hours before the flight, give a certificate from your doctor that you need this, and also a certificate from an animal trainer that this animal can behave. It partially has to do with the fact that the federal government was supposed to rule on this last summer and didn't get to it. So Delta just kind of stepped in and said, enough is enough. I think the other airlines will follow, and I don't blame them.
You know, I've taken enough flights over the years, Pauline Frommer, that I've actually had to break up fights between husbands and wives who are having normal disputes. You know, it wasn't over, you know, why were you looking at that girl, or I caught you, you know, with your comadre. Just a normal type husband and wife fight that elevated to a point it was out of control. I'll never forget, years ago, the great journalist Jimmy Breslin was married to a city council woman that represented the Upper West Side. They were riding in first class. It was a Delta flight down to West Palm Beach. And they got into a rock'em sock'em fight.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Ronnie Eldridge. And they're yelling, screaming, they're fighting. And naturally, the stewards and stewardesses, what do? It's a husband and a wife. So between service animals and comfort animals and husbands and wives duking it out on flights, boy, these attendants have their hands full nowadays.
Yeah, it's not an easy job. And, you know, often alcohol comes into the mix as well. That's a huge problem for flight attendants.
Well, that certainly mattered with Jimmy Breslin, who was like always half in the bag, you know, knocking back his Irish car bombs there.
Right. Sure. Yeah, so be kind to your flight attendant. Maybe that's the takeaway from all this. They're not the ones making the rules, and they're the ones having to deal with the consequences. Poor people. They're overworked and underloved often.
Yeah, and by the way, they can't even serve your peanuts any longer. Oh, double oofah. But anyway, that's Pauline Frommer, the Frommer's Travel Guides that are so popular in the traveling world. She's the host of the Frommer Travel Show, which you can listen to every Saturday, 3 to 4, after the Queen of Talk Radio, Joan Hamburg.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
You'll be the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Puff, puff, pass. No, that's not for cigarettes. But New Jersey wants to become the first state in the nation to have banned the sale of menthol cigarettes, which is like currency in jail, Newports. In fact, when you look at the bodegas and the convenience stores, 30 to 40% of their total product sales is menthol cigarettes. And you could imagine the growing black market that would exist, because people, when they get to Jones for menthol cigarettes, they don't want to be smoking Virginia Slims. Or what is that, the Eagle cigarettes, the cheap cigarettes, or there's no real cheap cigarettes anymore. But we got to have an extended conversation of how many millions of dollars we're losing to the black market because of cigarette sales with no tax cigarettes in both New York and New Jersey.